You're listening to Robert Wright's Non-Zero Podcast.
Hello, Paul Bloom, famous psychologist and publisher of the Small Potatoes newsletter.
Hello, Robert Wright, famous public intellectual, journalist, and publisher of the Non-Zero Podcast, Non-Zero Newsletter, Non-Zero Empire.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, I got to run. Thanks for the plug. No, actually, folks, there's so much more. You know, Paul, do you want to start with that? I got this list of fascinating shit we're going to talk about.
Have you heard any new songs recently?
Well, that's the first thing. Is Kanye West, or as I call him, is it Ye or Ye? Is it Ye? I call him Ye. Is he a Nazi? There's that. Is AI spelling the doom of all institutions we love by undermining trust? Why is Sam Altman want to give you money to scan your retina? Have New Yorker cartoons gone the way of John Henry? Thanks, AI.
More White Lotus stuff. We respond to comments.
Yeah, folks, you haven't heard enough about White Lotus from us? I have good news, but that is in overtime for paid subscribers. There's Trump and Carney. They met, and it's Trump generally. It's always Trump. Sadly, Elon Musk seems to be fading from the political spotlight. That was our bread and butter, Paul. Elon was our bread and butter. I'm worried.
That really brought in the paid subscriptions. In a world where I actually got any paid subscriptions, we can talk about that too.
Plus your post in your newsletter on why do bad things happen to bad people. Is that it, or did I get it wrong?
Something like that. But let's go ahead. Have you heard the song by Ye?
I listened to the first half of it, and I'll tell you why, Paul. First of all, because you called it to my attention, but also when I clicked on the link, I saw that the headline was Ye song. Did we decide? Is it Ye? It's Ye. It must be Ye, right?
Ye.
Ye song. Well, see, but now it sounds like you're celebrating
Ye
the song.
And
as I continue to read the headline, you're going to realize you don't want to celebrate this. Okay. Ye song glorifying Hitler gets millions of views on X while other platforms struggle to remove it. Now, Paul, when I first saw this, I thought, now, wait a second. Does it really glorify Hitler? Because it's common to read pro-Hitler sentiment into things that are at best ambiguous and in some cases clearly not pro-Hitler. For example,
he was just critical of the war on Gaza.
That could be what he meant. It could be. Wait a second. Will Smith said long ago, quote, even Hitler didn't wake up going, let me do the most evil thing I can do today. I think he woke up in the morning and using twisted backwards logic, he set out to do what he thought was good. Now, I think Will Smith is basically right here. This is the way people are. But he got into a shitload of trouble for that. He had to apologize, blah, blah, blah. So I thought, now is Ye really glorifying Hitler? But then I went to look at the song and I saw the title, Heil Hitler. Possibly. But then I listened to some of the lyrics and I thought, more ambiguous. Now, what is your take?
I listened to it. I didn't quite catch all the lyrics. Mm-hmm. He also samples Hitler near the end.
Oh,
which
he took out his vinyl versions of Hitler and he's like moving the record around and shit.
Just imagine if Hitler came back to life and he said, what? They're sampling me. I learned, which I never fully appreciated, Hitler rhymes with Twitter.
Well, it doesn't though, Paul.
Well,
rhymes with Twitler.
He makes it rhyme.
Paul, come on.
Like,
Paul, we got to elevate our standards here. Come on. You call me a public intellectual. I call you a famous psychologist. And you're saying Hitler rhymes with Twitter?
Anyway, I do think it's actually a fairly pro-Hitler thing, with a lot of pro-Hitler sentiments. It also mixes with Ye's very strong history of deep anti-Semitism and fondness for the Third Reich. So I think this is kind of an easy
call. Are you saying boo Ye?
Yes. Boo Ye and boo Hitler.
Now there's another controversial take, Paul.
That's what I like
about you. You know, you're like, fuck public opinion. If I think Hitler's bad, I'm going to say it. And there you said it.
I wrote against empathy a while ago, and got so much shit for it. And
that now, actually was now, asking for trouble.
And even now, though I'm trying to build up on the non-controversial views.
See, like that...
I'm
really,
and also by the way, the real villain of World War II, not Winston Churchill, Hitler.
Now that's a different matter. That's I mean, it's maybe not. Maybe it's part of the same cultural wave. This is an accusation that's being leveled at the guy whose Twitter handle is Martyr Maid. His name is Daryl something, I think.
Yes. And we could talk about, actually listen to the Joe Rogan episode where Douglas Murray was on and somebody else. It's not an interesting, but I just think just to get things straight, the yay thing is a totally different thing. This guy is deeply.
Okay. Deeply. Now I'm surprised. You know why? I actually started listening to the song, but I really didn't have time to listen to the whole thing. I know it's only like 2 minutes.
How busy are you? You don't have time to listen to the song?
I'm so busy, Paul. I'm so in demand. You know, there are people of even higher stature than you waiting in line to be on my podcast.
I can't believe that.
I got to get back to these people.
I heard an interview with Chomsky where he mentioned in passing that he was asked what he thought about the various movies made about him and documentaries made about him. He said, "I'm too busy to watch them."
That's the way I feel. I've never watched.
They made a documentary about you. You'd watch it. But anyway,
I've watched none of the documentaries about me.
Too busy to listen to the whole song. You know, you can listen to the song while you do other things, like, you know, mow the lawn or, you know.
Okay, so look, here's how far I got in the lyrics. If I had found it more musically congenial, I might have listened to the end. I'm not a super big hip hop fan. Some hip hop I kind of like. I didn't find this really, frankly, very engaging. I mean, this seems like bottom of the barrel hip hop tune to me. But leave my aesthetic judgment aside. Here's how far I got in the lyrics. They took my kids from me. This is the very beginning. They took my kids from me. Then they closed my bank account. I got so much anger in me, got no way to take it out. And then I got to the part where I think he says Heil Hitler, something pro Hitler.
Yeah.
And then, and so I figured his,
it's the voice of somebody disenfranchised.
Exactly. So I figured Kanye was, if you challenge him on this, he'd say, look, I'm just pointing out that, you know, material conditions of deprivation and desperation are what lead people to be attracted to bad people. It's a warning. It's a warning.
That's quite,
you know what,
reading.
That reminds me of the great hip hop song, The Message, which was a warning. Yeah, go ahead.
The Message. I'm not familiar with that one.
I think it's called The Message. It was epic. It's like Grandmaster Flash. Really a great song.
Yeah.
But different, a different kind of warning. And I may be wrong about everything I just said. It may be called something else, and it may be by Frank Sinatra. But Paul, I'm wrong. That's not his is that alibi not one he could trot out if you've listened to the whole song?
I'm not entirely sure that he's interested in alibi. He was selling T-shirts with a swastika on them, which got taken down. And he has publicly said many things that were quite critical of my people. So it's not, I think it's quite on brand for this to be exactly what it sounds like.
What kinds of things has he said about your people? Because, you know, sometimes people say ambiguous things about your people, and then your people, you know, say that they weren't good things. Let's hear what did he say.
I haven't really followed Kanye West's attacks on the Jewish people.
Turns out Paul just leveled an accusation against Ye. Did you not do enough research to back up the accusation you just leveled against Ye?
I was not prepared, but I think he blames us as a group for the problems in life, for his marriage problems, for his money problems. He blames us. He says he was deceived by a Jewish manager.
Oh, actually, I heard that part. Yeah, no, he had an agent, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. Jewish agent. what are the odds? Sorry. This is okay.
I have a Jewish agent. Do you have a Jewish agent? Mine's great. I have no complaints. I've never, no slurs about him have ever left my mouth or about his people.
Yeah, you are not to be tarred with the same brush as.
Wait,
as,
is your agent John Brockman?
Katinka Manson, who works. Yeah.
Brockman, I could say something negative about, by the way, but not about his people, but.
Yeah, I could think I.
But we'll do that in overtime. Personal encounter with him.
Personal. Okay.
That I'll share in overtime.
Yeah. Where are we now? I think So, a friend of mine said, "Have you heard this? It's quite catchy." And I said, so I went on Google, and then I went to Spotify, couldn't find it. Went on YouTube, couldn't find it. And then I found out just by searching for it that it's been banned from everywhere, except for X, the final bastion of free speech. So here's a question.
Not so much. I don't know. But anyway.
I'm being somewhat sarcastic.
Relatedly, this is not unrelated, actually. Did you see the evidence that Elon Musk, it's somewhat circumstantial, but I think people who understand the technology, AI people and everything, are saying it's for real. But the Grok AI inadvertently disclosed that it had been instructed to say, something like, yeah, white genocide is real, but also to depict these white South Africans who claim persecution and are coming to America to somehow treat them or that issue as they would like it treated. It sounds like they intervened at the actual system prompt level. This is an allegation, circumstantial evidence.
I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be shocked. Elon Musk just showed a flagrant disregard for free speech on X. And so it suggests that what he leaves on. Mm-hmm. You know, he's willing to ban people for using the term cis, which he views as a slur.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fine. But hi Hitler. Yeah, I mean, these are choices. But so here's my question. I think of the two.
It is Heil Hitler, right? It's Heil Hitler.
I always go Heil Hitler. You put Heil. Heil?
I think. H-E-I-L?
Hell could be silent.
Could be. Anyway. And Claude could be pronounced Cloud.
Well, you never forget anything, do you? So I tend to be more of a free speech guy here of the two of us, I think, and dealing on the edges. But I don't know. What do you think if you were in charge of Spotify or YouTube? Would you ban the song from there?
Well, I would think I'd do it before you would. You're more of a free speech absolutist than I am.
That's what I was saying. But even here, it kind of, I don't think Ye should go to prison for this. I don't think the government should ban this.
No, not the government.
But if I think Spotify has every right to say, we're not going to put this on.
Oh, they definitely have the right, I think. I mean, I think, yeah. And I think I probably would ban. I mean, I'd have to read the lyrics. But certainly, if I agree with you that he doesn't have this defensible out, if you read all of the lyrics and take it in context and look at his T-shirt sales and so on.
Yeah,
I'd be happy to kick it off the platform. I mean, you know, people, free speech absolutists, I think one thing they don't understand is they're embracing an experiment that's really never been conducted before. Like, we're in an environment where technology kind of makes it hard for there to be any gatekeepers, right? Like, you know, when I was a boy, Paul, which was only a little before you were a boy, you know, there were three networks and so on. And there were, you know, I mean, there's a huge amount of gatekeeping. Too much. I think we probably have a right to know that JFK is, you know, doing the mystery dance with everything that moves, you know? I think that's an inalienable right.
And was deeply buzzed on painkillers during much of his presidency.
Yeah, and so was Hitler, by the way. But
your ability to tie these things together is why you are an extraordinary.
This is why people flock. It accounts for the flocks. But Hitler was also, you know what I was going to say? Hitler was also, I think, on speed or something, or cocaine maybe. But Kennedy was also on speed. You know, they gave him injections of amphetamine, unless I've got this wrong.
It's terrible back pain right after his plane crashed.
I think it was back pain. I mean, you know, the amphetamines, I don't know if those helped that. Anyway, let's talk about the assassination, Paul. No, I'm kidding.
No. I was wondering which assassination, and then I realized
But I'm serious. Like, there have never been societies that didn't have speech codes is my premise. Maybe I'm wrong. Somebody can give me the counterexample, but
even a free speech absolutist, and I'm happy to take that mantle, would say you got some restrictions. You know, we're not against laws against extortion, blackmail, insider trading, even copyright infringement.
And laws aside, now I do think,
and then there's norms.
The First Amendment is good. Keep the government out of the censorship business, but there have always been other forms of speech restraint, normative forms.
Yeah.
And so on.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm not a free speech absolutist. It's not clear to me that, especially in a multi-ethnic society, you know, you can keep things together if certain kinds of speech aren't effectively marginalized.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm not sure there's anybody who's so much of a free speech absolutist that they deny that some things shouldn't be given the same platform as something else, that people have to make choices. You choose who to talk with. You know, I'm not sure you would choose to have a yay on a non-zero.
No, I would never have somebody who could bring me a shitload of traffic on Paul. I'm sticking with you.
You see, it's, you don't make any money off of having me, but you feel good about yourself.
I feel so pure. It's like I feel cleansed. It's a beautiful thing.
It's the same. We were talking before revenue to Substacks. And in fact, if we want to segue, my most recent small potato Substack was about envy and envy and other things. And I started off by saying, I went on, I just saw on somebody's Substack who I know, there's an orange tick mark. I had no idea what a tick mark meant. So I clicked on it and it said thousands of paid subscribers. And to me, that's like 2,000. Now, you know, maybe it's $80 a year. If you do the math per subscriber, maybe more, maybe less. You do the math. That's a lot of money. I don't. But then it occurred to me, and maybe you thought this when you read my Substack, that I was talking about you, because you have a fair amount of.
I have over. Non-Zero has over 2,000 paid subscribers. It's true. I mean, the annual is only 60 plus you periodically offer discounts and so on. So still, no, I'm awash and I'm rolling in the dough. Yeah.
Because that's $400,000, $500,000 all the time. Like $300,000, $400,000.
But maybe your friend is whatever friend you're talking about. I can tell it wasn't me because you proceeded to say unflattering things about this person without naming them. What did you say about them?
I said that they have the kind of Substack, which is despite being smart and very good, basically tells the people who read it, you are wonderful and special and brave, and everyone else is a stupid asshole.
And
people love that stuff.
Yeah. That wasn't me for sure.
No. Yeah. So you challenge your...
No, I say to people, you suck.
But anyway, we were talking about this a little bit before we start taping. I was telling you that my rate of subscribers is cheerfully growing. More and more people are enjoying small potatoes, engaging in comments. I love it. The paid subscribers have plateaued over the last few months.
And so the paid have plateaued.
I figure, humbly enough, anyone who's willing to pay to read my Substack has already made the decision to pay. There are no more people who want to pay. More people are being born each day. You can imagine, but still.
Yeah. No, it's a long-term project to cultivate them. I mean, the ones just born.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. I've seen our total subscription numbers kind of start to plateau beginning in early April. And I thought maybe there's some Substack-wide change in what they're doing that is harder on some people, easier on others. So I'm putting out a call to Substack newsletter proprietors to let us know if you experienced a sudden decline in your fortunes, I don't know, 6-8 weeks ago or something, I'd be curious.
I mean, another explanation is Substack is just increasingly popular. It's not strictly speaking.
Well, I think that's true. They're doing well.
It's not strictly speaking zero sum to go on your brand. But, you know, if somebody subscribes to Freddie DeBoer, they're a little bit less likely to subscribe to me because people don't have infinite money.
Mm-hmm.
And so the more there is, the less there is for any one of us.
So true. And, but see what I think, I mean, there has been a big boom for sure. Substack's numbers are growing and they're getting big names. And this is one thing I worry about is maybe they're going toward a kind of a winner take all model, you know, the way book publishers went toward, you know, like
okay, the long tail, right?
Well, the opposite of long tail. Yeah, but I guess, well, unless you think of the winners who take all as having long enduring smaller but persistent sales.
No, I'm more thinking of like the book market is 99% of books that lose money. And then there's J.K. Rowling and Stephen King and James Patterson. And the whole business works on that. And for everything, there's a term for this. People remind us in the comments for when it's not a sort of normal distribution.
Now that is a long tail. You've got the right term.
Okay. Anyway, so probably true for Substack too. There's Matt Iglesias and you know Andy.
But there's also like people who became stars in MSM who have moved to Substack, and that's a recent trend. And I mean, the other thing is just that. See, here's my concern: is that a subscriber, leave aside paid subscribers, just a subscriber is giving you less of their attention than they used to because they're subscribing to more newsletters. Yep. I think more people, newsletters automatically go into a folder and maybe they remember to check it. And in any event, there's like 10 different newsletters in it. So, I mean, you're right. Attention is a zero-sum game, except to the extent that more people come on to Substack as subscribers than they used to be. But half of the subscribers start newsletters. It's, I don't know about this treadmill, man.
My wife tells me I need to start a beef. Like, that's the way to do it.
A fight? You mean like a fight?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, but you can do it now. You can do it with me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's good. That's good.
Bring it on. Come on. What's the matter? You afraid? You girly boy? Is Paul a girly boy? Come on, bring it on.
I want to do it with you, but also like, I mean, I should like pick a fight with like Matt Iglesias or who's really
I got
popular?
A great idea. I got a great idea.
Yeah.
Yay.
Oh, does Yay have a Substack?
Oh, does he have to have a Substack?
I think what you want is people, maybe not. Maybe you just have to write a Substack. Like the Substack that Cash Fired, I think, are like very controversial, beautiful, brilliant, but also ones that sort of seem aggressive, like, you know, 8 reasons why nobody should, you know, should read Stephen King anymore or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. That's edgy.
Edgy. Yeah.
I
think my natural generosity of spirit gets in the way.
Maybe we should fake a fight. It's like, what do they call it? Kayfabe in pro wrestling?
Yeah. Yeah. Like Drake and Drake.
And Jay? No.
Drake and
the other guy. Now this is a thing. Do you secretly disapprove of this thing that you're afraid to disapprove of publicly, of like this thing in hip hop of like disrespecting other artists? It's like a whole thing. And you shouldn't do it too much because every once in a while, one of them gets killed. Well, remember Tupac. Who of us can forget Tupac, right?
Spending a lot of time discussing, you know, the hip hop world, you and me, and I, at least I am not. This is not my world.
I'm trying to convey our versatility. Okay, let's move on. What else is on our list, Paul?
Sam Altman.
Okay, WorldCoin. I've looked into this. So Sam Altman has invested in a company that's called World, and I think it both makes the WorldCoin, a crypto, and makes the Orb. You know what the Orb is?
The Las Vegas Orb?
No. Oh, I mean, different. You could have one in Las Vegas. Yeah. The Orb is a thing you buy, and then it scans your retina, and then you can prove that you're human online is the idea. Now, the good news is, and I tweeted about this erroneously, thinking it meant that there was a database. There is no centralized database, and yet, I guess maybe it uses blockchain technology, who knows, but somehow, in principle, with this system, you can prove to any other person out there, like if they encounter you online and they think maybe you're an AI bot, this technology allows you to prove that you are a human without them knowing which human you are. So in theory, It preserves your anonymity. It establishes your humanity in one sense of the term. And it doesn't involve a centralized database, in theory. The weird thing, there's no need to connect this kind of thing to a cryptocurrency, but what he's doing is to incentivize people to get his orb. He's saying, we'll give you 150 world coins if you will get an orb and scan your retina, I guess. And meanwhile, the value of the world coin has been dropping, which I guess is what happens if you just give a bunch of them away, right? If nobody's actually buying them, you're just giving them away. It doesn't, probably doesn't help the value. But I guess he imagines that this will still, it'll become a, some kind of standard crypto, and then he'll be in the catbird seat. Maybe he owns some, who knows? But, so that's that.
Do you have feelings about this? The orb seems like not
well,
a bad
it doesn't,
idea.
It's not as alarming as I thought it was when I thought there would be a centralized database. Yeah. Now, is it, and I guess there's a need for such a thing, but I was listening to a conversation about this, and it sounds very challenging to get the technology exactly right, to achieve all the things I just said, like complete confidence that you are a person without your identity and no centralized database. I think there's going to be a little give in the system where it's more like 98% confidence you're human. Or anyway, this will apparently become a thing. I mean, in a way, what's more interesting is the need for it, right? Because for all you know, any half the things you encounter on Twitter are bots. Yeah. I'm sure some of them, I'm pretty sure are. I even said to one, like, you're a bot, right? And it was so interestingly evasive. I'm more convinced than ever that it was a bot. But so, yeah, and also, you know, AI has tremendous persuasive potential. Studies have already shown AIs being more effective than humans at getting people to change their minds about things. So you can imagine people organizing creepy religious cults and exploiting people and convincing them to vote for Elon Musk for president. Even though that's not constitutionally permitted, and stuff like that. So,
you know,
so
there's all sorts of issues. Yeah, there's issues of deception. There's mm-hmm. You know, one thing which I don't know how much to worry about is you hear more and more cases of really elderly people getting a phone call from somebody who purports to be their son or daughter and say, oh, I'm in terrible trouble, and so on.
Right.
It's their voice. And so on. And, you know, It's very hard not to fall for that if you're not prepared for it and you send them sending the money. So it would be good to have some way to authenticate people in these communications. I could send us a signal that it's me.
Like if you could say, show me your orb. Yeah, I actually don't know how the proof part works.
Yeah,
I don't know what they show you to convince you that they're human, but something.
My wife and I, by the way, have a code word.
What is the word?
We'd have to do a new one if I still do the word. We have a code word.
Come on. We trust each other.
You know, it could be gorilla.
Could
that's
be.
A code word. It could be ladder. Yeah, any word would do. But we have a code word. And I'm thinking, like, you know, my dad's 90. I should talk to him. Maybe tell him my code word. And then there's the issue of the question.
I'll tell you, if your dad's 90 and you don't have to worry about him forgetting the code word, he is in good shape.
He's on top of things.
That's great.
On top of things.
Because I wouldn't remember it. That's why you can tell me. It's fine. Tell me, because I will not remember it.
Every month, we kind of remind each other of the code word.
So, you and your father?
No, my wife.
She's more likely to forget it than your father is?
Just so we both remember the code word, we just keep it active. It's just kind of romantic. Actually, she
it sounds like that.
To get to the more broad thing, she was once talking to customer support, like talking to them over a phone. And at one point, she says, "You an AI?" And the person customer support said, "I am not an AI." I got really mad.
And then said,
"You are not the first person to ask me that."
So, whoa.
Maybe they have very AI-like affect.
Yeah, I would have hung up on her, man.
Why so I might get an man? I might get an orb.
Yeah, do get an orb. So let's see, what else? Actually, there's a different sense in which you're worried about AI eroding trust. There's an item that got your attention, right? Not so much like bots online trying to convince you to vote for Elon Musk, but
I don't know how much of a niche topic this is, but it is something which is agonizing professors and teachers in high schools and everything, which is so much of what we do, so much of what I do involves reading assignments and where they have to, students have to write an essay for something, either as a final paper, or what I do for my seminars is I have them write reading responses every week and they send in the reading responses. This serves multiple purposes. It shows that they've done the readings because you need to write the response. But also, I think it's just valuable in general. I think writing is valuable. I think it's a valuable skill and it helps you think through things, writing an essay. But as you may have heard, AI is very good at doing this for students. And so there's an article in New York Magazine, which just wasn't a scientific sort of thing. They just a whole lot of anecdotes, but tons of students say, I just use ChatGPT to do all of this. And it is impossible to catch it. I mean, there's all these fancy ways people try to do it and algorithms and everything, but really anybody could ask it to do a first draft and say, make it more sound more like a student. And it's indistinguishable. And this is a real problem. It's a problem which is I'm teaching a seminar in the fall, and I don't know how to evaluate students. I trust most students, but some will cheat, and I don't want a student who cheats to get all A's. But more generally, I just don't know what to do. And I could move the evaluation to in-class evaluation, like they write essays in class, they do exams in class. But I want
them, do that.
But I want them to write. I think writing is important.
Well, make them write a long essay in class.
But
I mean, it's true if it were me
and I had an hour to write an essay. I that's not how I write essays. You need to take.
No, time, I agree. I agree. It's an unfortunate compromise because I do think there's something to be said for the old world in which, you know, they do the assignment in their own time. And so, you know, those of them who aren't super fast fluid writers, if they're willing to put in the extra time, they can do better. There's something to be said for that world. On the other hand, you were never sure they were writing the papers, right? Friends have been writing papers for friends for a long time. And for many years now, there have been these online paper mills.
Yes.
And so, you know, I'll tell you, I have a related beef. You know, the essay exam that used to be on the SAT, they would have to write an essay. Yep. They would give it these grades like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And that seemed to be kind of stupid. I thought the beauty of the SAT was no subjective element. But still, they shouldn't have gotten rid of it because, college admissions offices could have access to it, and that was a way for them to read something that they were sure the student wrote by themselves. Yeah. And, you know, as it is, these essays that come into admissions offices, it's like, what are the chances that the student actually wrote it? Well, probably inversely correlated with their income level, right? I mean, which is the opposite of a just situation.
Yep.
And so, that's my beef about that. Why didn't they
pay consultants to write these admissions essays? I guess now that the poorer students will just ask ChatGPT or
Claude, maybe it's an equalizer. But I really think as a professor, I mean, unless you redefine your mission and you can make this case and say, look, AIs are going to be tools in the real world. One of the main things colleges do is prepare students to succeed in the real world. In the world of business, in the world of interpersonal communication, in the world of argumentation, we're going to be in a world where everybody's using AI. So let the best user of AI get the A+. You could make that argument.
Tyler Cowen has a very interesting discussion with somebody whose name I forget about the use of AI in the world and which AI is better. And also for classes, because he's a professor. And he says, Tyler said that he taught this seminar in economics department. And for the assignments, he said to students, look, there's not a textbook for this course, but I want you to, you have to pay for a good AI. You have to pay the extra money for you, not just a free version, but good AI. And you should use AI fully to help write your paper in any way possible. And I'm going to expect genius level stuff. So I'm going to expect something. The AI will do it this way. That's very good, better for me than most students. Yeah. I want 10 times better than that. I want you to use AI and build on it, challenge it, ask it questions, expand on it. I think there's some value to it, but it's not writing.
Yeah. I mean, meanwhile, there's the whole question of whether even physically assembling on college campuses makes sense the way it did once. I mean, you know, I get kind of
there's a lot of things we do for cultural reasons, because this is just how it's been done, and there's immense cultural forces behind it. And I think there's no case where this is more true than my chosen profession of a university professor, where, you know, I teach a large lecture class, and students, you know, I go and I stand on this auditorium, and students drag their asses from across town, from an hour commute, so they could sit in a seat and listen to me talk. And you'd think that there are technological ways to get around that. But
there may be. Yeah.
You know, think about it. But we don't use
them. But they've only shown up pretty recently, and they're going to become more and more powerful and more like actually being there. I mean, you know, a big part of the point of being in college, I think, has always been to meet the other students, network with them, make some good lifelong friends. And that's one reason people want to get into the best colleges. Yeah. Then they'll have the kinds of friends who can do them the most good. I don't mean they necessarily think about it this way, but it's part of the deal. And it is still the case for the time being that you can forge a stronger bond through actual physical interaction, I think, than online, but you know, less and less. And so I don't know what'll happen to it. Would just be amazing if in 5 years people are going, we really don't need physical universities. Of course, by then they may be going, we don't need human beings. So
yeah.
What the?
I think AI is a real game changer. I'll tell you something more skeptical, which is when I would write that down next to Hitler's.
Thank you.
Bat.
Paul says AI will have an effect on human society. I'm writing it down.
But I'll tell you what hasn't been a game changer. About 10 years ago, when I was at Yale, I was part of a committee about to talk about online courses, like courses on Coursera and edX.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually have an intro psych course and a moralities course on Coursera, which my intro psych course has been watched by like 1.5 million people. Like a lot of, it gets a lot of coverage, this sort of thing. And
you're kind of boasting, Paul.
I'm just hoping that it gets transferred into paid Substack subscribers. But so we presented this to
let's just pause. Do you realize you can send emails to everyone subscribed to your, I hope you've abused that privilege. I have.
What do you use it for?
Well, nothing anymore, because I don't have it anymore. I mean, you know, I was just at Princeton for 2 years. I'm not even a credentialed academic, taught this seminar on Buddhism. But while there, I did this Coursera course under the Princeton brand.
Yep.
And it did me a world of good for a while, but I mean, I didn't have your kind of numbers, Paul, and I wouldn't boast about them if I did, frankly. But you know, we were well into the six figures, and you did have the opportunity. You don't get their email addresses; you never know what they're. But you can go on to the thing.
Oh yeah,
and send out stuff. You know, as long as you're publishing a book that's relevant to the course or something, So they allowed you to, Coursera allowed you to do that. Anyway, Princeton implemented this new policy that it, for professors who are no longer at the university, their courses couldn't be on the Princeton platform. So I just put them on YouTube. But I think maybe, do you think it was targeted just at me personally, Paul, this whole policy change? It was just one of these get Bob things that are so common in the world?
It seems vindictive.
I think it's probably what happened.
If so, largely motivated.
It was probably the board of trustees meeting about it. Yeah.
Anyway, I got to finish the story, because otherwise it sounds like I just was boasting. But so we bring this to the faculty meeting, saying we should, you know, the president was very into it. In fact, the president of of Yale, Rich Grick Levin, when he left Yale, then became president of, it was either Coursera or edX. Coursera, I think. You know, so there was this prior motivation to get involved in the distance learning business. And the faculty were furious. And they said, this is going to ruin the university. People are going to stop going to Yale. They're going to stop going to university. We'll lose our jobs. Our students will lose our jobs. And some of them were furious. And basically what happened was, in the end, it was kind of a bust.
Yeah.
Coursera, edX, they're mostly watched by older people who aren't going to campus. They get a lot of coverage in India and China and countries where you don't have access to American university, which I think is great. But it didn't affect the American university system at all, for whatever reason. But AI will and has been.
AI will affect human society. I return to the point you made so that people don't forget it. They can hold you accountable. Any news in the Canada, U.S.? So Carney, your man, your new leader, yeah. visited the White House.
Yes.
He and Trump seem to just get along famously.
You think, you know, people were showing a clip about, and they said, oh, Carney humiliated Trump. And but what Carney is this awkward banker type. And he praised Trump. At one point he says, you know, as a real estate developer, you know, and Trump got all, you know, happy and everything. And he sucked up to Trump a bit. But then he quite sternly denied, said, look, you're not going to actually take possession of Canada. And then Trump said, never say never. And people laughed. I think Carney did well.
Yeah, he did. And he kind of transitioned into that you ain't getting Canada thing, yeah. Kind of gracefully. He said, you know, there are some things that just aren't for sale. For example, yes. The White House, where we're in, that's not for sale.
Yes,
and Trump,
yes.
Yeah, you're right about that.
Yeah, Trump said, that's a good point.
That's a good point. And Carney says, Buckingham Palace. Trump loves Buckingham Palace, of course. Yeah. He loves that kind of shit. Even as we speak, he's with royalty in Saudi Arabia or something. And Trump says, you're right about that. And then Carney says, and Canada, bitch. Right? Is that what he said?
Yeah. Canada, bitch. That was right.
That was good.
That was right. You know, there's a sexual aspect to this, which is barely ever commented on. Not due to Carney, but due to Carney's predecessor, Justin Trudeau, who Trump did not like at all.
Mm.
And I have a small theory of what went wrong, which is Trudeau is a very handsome man, a handsome, slim man.
And Melania clearly had the hots for him. You can see it. You can smell it.
That's the theory.
They're probably, even as we speak, you know what they're doing?
What
Melania and Justin?
Right.
I'd be shocked if they weren't. You know what I'm saying?
The odds are in your favor. But anyway, there's this picture of her looking at and next to her somewhat dumpy older husband. So
now.
I think that is, I don't want to, yeah, I feel bad.
You're talking about my president, Paul, okay?
But Mark Carney does not come off as a sort of sexually competitive in a way that Trudeau.
No, it doesn't. It's not the same thing.
So yay the Canada. Opposite.
Yeah.
Canada, home of the sexually non-threatening prime ministers.
Carney probably should have played up that part about just said, you know, I will never have sex with your wife. Said that to Trump, you know, as a kind of a selling point.
In passing, mentioned a lower libido, lack of sexual energy, that sort of thing.
Just said, look, one thing you can rest assured of, I will never try to get in between Melania and Justin. You don't have to worry about that. Right?
Anyway, so Canada's doing well. We've had a brief period where Trump has not actively threatened to destroy us. My feeling is Trump being Trump, soon his attention will start shifting back to this, and then he'll
although I'm kind of heartened. I'm not as worried as I was, you know, 2 months ago. I think, you know, he has shown that he is sensitive to feedback. He's sensitive to the stock market. He's, I think, sensitive to his approval rating. And I think he's kind of recognized that the just, you know, I break all the rules identity, it didn't work all that swimmingly. Now, he is still breaking rules, God knows. He's willing to break as many as possible, but He's at least recognized that some forms of rule breakage aren't working for him, and just kind of norm breakage. I mean, he did push Elon out of the spotlight, I think, when he saw what a liability he was. And they have obeyed all the clear-cut court orders, like, you know, I mean, the ones like turn this plane around in midair is a little too easy to get around, because you can just say next day, oops, we forgot, and now he's in the custody of another government. But when the court says let this person out of jail, they let him out of jail. And I don't know, there's still, I'm sure, this ton of regrettable stuff going on, and the whole thing is still concerning to me, but I'm a little less worried.
So you're uncharacteristically optimistic about the Trump administration.
Well, I'm just more optimistic than I was like 6 weeks ago. Everyone I know, well, 90% of people I know were quite worried, because this is just a whole nother level from the way he started his administration last time. And the tariff thing, I mean, you know, but he totally backed off of the tariffs. I mean, he does have a real gift for just backing down and spinning it as a win and having at least half of America buy it, you know? Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of what he's done with the tariffs so far.
He's still actively involved in trying to destroy research universities.
Oh, yeah. No, there's a ton of, and the media. I mean, see, he's got CBS intimidated. I mean, he's still doing the authoritarian playbook. I mean, the universities and the media are two classic things, right? That you like Modi in India. I had this Indian political scientist on the podcast a few weeks ago, and same thing. I mean, this guy personally was kind of hounded out of a college by Modi, and this is classic. The universities, the media, various other things, but like, you know, CBS, I guess Trump has sued CBS and their parent company, I forget, is it Paramount? Wants to do some merger they're going to need Trump's approval for. And so, first of all, if I'm right about the lawsuit, I imagine a big out-of-court settlement if there hasn't been one. Sorry, I know so little about this. What I do know is that the head of 60 Minutes resigned because they were reining him in because they want to stay in Trump's good graces for this merger, because they know Trump is the kind of president who's going to use every policy lever at his disposal to punish his personal enemies. Yep. This is alarming. You know, Facebook settled out of court for what, $25 million? They just, that money went in Trump's pocket, okay? It was a bullshit suit that Facebook probably would have won. But I think Zuckerberg just said, fuck, what's $25 million? Let's put it in Trump's pocket. He'll be nicer to us.
Yeah.
It's all very alarming. Jeff Bezos, Washington Post, you know,
all of the law firms that
pledged all the big ones
to not support enemies of Trump, and often to pro bono support Trumpian causes.
Right, which means that the people who are victims of presidential overreach, whose liberties are being taken away, have more trouble finding lawyers, good lawyers, the best lawyers. So. Yeah, it's all fucked. Don't get me wrong.
Okay, good.
But he seems a little less crazy than he seemed 6 weeks ago.
A little bit, yeah. Well,
a little bit.
Yeah.
So should we segue into overtime?
How long I think we should. We got a lot to talk about.
Oh, man. White Lotus, Pantheon. I promised to talk shit about John Brockman, famous agent. So his wife is now your agent?
Yeah, she's been my agent.
I'm just going to repeat something that's on the public record. Well, actually, yeah, more or less.
No, Katinka's wonderful. She's been my agent since my very first book in a long time ago.
Well, I'm trying to convert her to a paid subscriber. So if you're out there and you want to hear somebody talk shit about your husband, pay up.
I'm gonna nip this one in the bud. We don't need to talk badly about people, Bob.
All right, so you're going to take back what you said about yay?
Oh,
yay, not a person?
Yeah.
Oh, is yay, not a person,
yay,
Paul?
Yay, yeah.
Is that because of his skin color, Paul, that you don't consider him a person?
You know, we're all God's children.
I suppose.
Should know from your background, you should know this.
You're right. That is what they said.
Isn't that from your people?
Yeah, actually, we used to sing the song as I went in Southern Baptist Church.
Yeah, I think this was
Jesus loves little children, all children of the world, red and yellow, black and white. They are precious in his sight. I actually think that was a significant thing that back, this is like even before the Civil Rights Act in the South, in Texas, where I was, they were singing that song in Southern Baptist churches. I think that was a positive and constructive thing.
That's serious radical shit at the time.
I don't know about radical, but it was good, as I pointed out to Chris Hitchens in one of my debates with him. May God rest his soul. May peace be upon him. Okay. What else are we going to talk? We're going to talk about New Yorker. Oh, these AI generated New Yorker cartoons. Are all New Yorker cartoonists out of a job? We're going to ask, having seen a couple of the products of O3 that look remarkably like, respectable New Yorker cartoons to me. We got commenter stuff we're going to talk about. And they raise such questions as like AI and consciousness, substitutionary atonement, always a crowd pleaser. I don't know. It seems like there should be other stuff. I'm going to say more positive stuff about Trump.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, don't give it away.
I better do that right away before we forget. So we're going into overtime to get access to it. If you don't have it, become a paid subscriber to either Paul's Small Potatoes newsletter or the Non-Zero newsletter. And you know what my personal recommendation would be if you were faced with those two choices, but Paul, your view may differ.
I would, if they subscribe to you, I would still
you will
be
sleep
happy.
Better at night.
I'd still be happy.
Good. You're better man. okay. And we'll think of other crazy shit to talk about. I want to talk about the show Pantheon a little, even though nobody's watched it, but me and a bunch of AI freaks.
You keep mentioning it.
I know.
We've been watching The Last of Us.
What's that?
We've been watching The Last of Us.
No. We can talk about that.
Yeah. Okay.
So, folks, okay. I don't know how you can miss this. This is going to be amazing.
Smash the like button.
Rate and review, and we will see you.
Follow us on Apple Podcasts and other venues. And all coming back. These lines I hear from things.
You're getting really good at this, man. That came out like just butter. It was so smooth, butter. Okay.
More good stuff coming.
Thanks, folks. We're heading into overtime.